This is Robin with Queer Lehigh Valley, here with my guest Nia. We're super excited today to talk a little bit about queerness and gardening. Here at Queer Lehigh Valley, we cover all things queer in the Lehigh Valley. So I'll give you a chance to introduce yourself, Nia. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Nia. I am a being who is a mama, who grows herbal medicine, food, who is constantly a student of many things, who exists in the in-between all the time. And that's me for now.
That's a beautiful way to capture yourself. I love that. I appreciate that sometimes when you're answering a question, it sounds like a poem. I can tell that you're a poet of center kind of person.
Always, yeah.
Sweet. So I really like plants, so I'm excited to talk to you about plants. Mm-hmm. What are some of your earliest memories developing like relationships with plants?
It would be my grandmother's backyards. I lived with both of them. My parents lived with their mothers. Mm-hmm. And so for my mom's mom, that backyard was a beautiful size to me, enough to have it be my own world. And the perimeter of the yard always had perennials. And with enough space, with consistent annuals that we would plant. So I would plant them with my grandmother and my aunt and occasionally my siblings. And then my dad's mom had the most beautiful rose bush. The rest of the yard was cement, walls and stairs. And my cousins and I always used it to play like bouncy ball games or jumping off. But the rose bush always stood out to me, and also in the front yard. So there were these mirrored rose bushes.
Roses are really beautiful, and they have like many uses. Everyone always gets excited or like surprised when I'm like, you can generally eat them or make tea or stuff like that.
I think that's more a recent discovery. Also that there's such a huge spiritual element for protection.
Yeah, for sure.
So now reflecting back through my life and associating memories to the presence of plants, it is a healing way to move through reflections.
Yeah, I love that. I have similar memories. Like my parents' like backyard growing up, we had like a giant spearmint bush. And now that I like plant and tend more plants, spearmint can sometimes cause some frustrations because it can take over places. But then I remember what it was like being a little kid and having those first memories of like getting to eat the spearmint leaves or make them into stuff. I love hearing all about that. When did you start gardening?
I would say when I was 26, I got to witness a former friend and their relationship with plants and their garden. And they traveled. So when they would travel, they were like, can you water my garden? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's such a huge responsibility. But so that was my first nudge to go from this place of witnessing and playful and a pretty big hiatus through my 20s to mid-20s, 26, like here, care, keep alive, still distant enough, wasn't like the responsibility from seeding or planting. And then when I was 28, I started growing my first being, and we really relied on the community garden near us in West Philadelphia to feed us. So our budget was purchase our grains and our starches, but this garden was what sustained us. And again, it was this continuity of people going on vacation and us volunteering to water, and then the understanding was harvest while we're away what you need, and so we would rely on those different plants that we ourselves weren't growing.
That's beautiful. So you've interacted with like a few community gardens for a while then. I have so many questions, so I'm trying to find a good place to continue. What were some of the things that were grown in that garden that you have memories of the one in West Philly you were talking about?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that was my introduction to pawpaws.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting.
A baby pawpaw. There was a really healthy adolescent cherry tree. I met, Jimson weed for the first time, just like not necessarily like edible, but just the presence of new plants. In my particular garden, I had calendula, burdock root, marshmallow. Who else was there? Some peppers, a cherry tomato. There was one other herb in the back left corner, if I'm standing from the top of it. I can't remember, but I can still vaguely see it.
Yeah. And in our conversation, I've noticed, and like, it's something that I do too. Sometimes we talk about plants, like I usually think of them as like siblings or like, I don't know, friends. Can you tell folks about a little bit like where that framing might come from for people who might not be familiar with it, or just why?
Yeah. Well, again, that original friend who had the garden, they would wonder, often just go, I'm going to go talk to this plant now, and introduced me to the ability of talking to plants. So then it was more like this, okay, well, here I am a little stressed out. I'm going to go wander off and look at it and talk out loud. And not feel self-conscious about it. And then I started to learn about plants and just understanding throughout time our species' reciprocal relationship for the pockets of population who did hold that. That dynamics. And so I just felt like it was really seamless to carry that on. And I think that's how I interact with most folks in general. So it just like continued that way when I started to deepen my relationship with plant beings.
That makes a lot of sense. And I love that. I appreciate you like breaking it down for folks who might not have like heard about that before. I'm so happy that they had a pawpaw tree too at that garden, because I love pawpaws. For people who don't know, they're a native plant to our area here. And they're kind of like a mix between a banana and a mango, but all their own still. Me and Rain have some pawpaw trees in our yard that we are like crossing our fingers that they might have fruit this year. I'm giving them their time, but they've been growing for a while, so it would be exciting if they were here. But thinking about pawpaws, I mean, it makes a lot of sense talking about like that relationship between humans and plants, because like pawpaws, just from some of my friends who are Susquehannock, who are folks who are indigenous to this area, they had talked to me a little bit about like what they had heard about cultivating pawpaws and how there's obviously like an element of natural selection, but that people also selected to keep planting the pawpaw trees that had the largest fruit or stuff like that. And so some of the varieties of pawpaws that we have today come from that work of people who've been tending the land. So I love that connection to things. So talked a bunch about plants. I wanted to kind of braid this together a little bit to talking a little bit about queerness our show's Queerly High Valley, but queerness can encompass a lot of things. What does queerness mean to you?
I think the biggest word for me is interconnection. Growing up as defined while I was growing up as a biracial person, there was a lot of polarities and dualities, and I accepted them all for a really long time. But blossoming into parenthood, into motherhood, those lines and boxes just collapsed. And it started to become louder to me that I was able to decide and make choices of who I am. And so it was very beautiful and fearing and all of the things. And so I had everything. I really analyzed about how I accepted those terms and labels without research, without confirmation from myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so in embracing queerness, I fell in love with myself again.
Mm-hmm.
That I was like, oh, I'm interconnected. I hold mm-hmm. simultaneously all essences and energies.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe one is more present than the other, but the sets of boths mm-hmm. are not either or. It's both and mm-hmm. always, you know. Maybe up until I was 8 years old, having families use the terms black and white, while both true, both in their own beautiful, but also both loaded with pain yeah. and trauma, I would take those colors and repetitively color them over and over again and mix and be like, well, I'm taking black and I'm taking white and I'm getting gray. Why am I not gray? Why am I not gray? You know? And that shows up
yeah.
just like now constantly again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And it settles in my sexuality. Mm-hmm. It meets me in my identity. It, you know? And so finally I was like, I am the merging. I am where the river meets the ocean. I am all and nothing at the same time. And comfortably and uncomfortably settling into that
yeah.
and allowing folks to meet me now and be comfortable with their own digestion of what I am speaking and how I am speaking and who I am present before them has allowed me to like have this beautiful definition of queerness.
That was beautiful. And again, that was a poem. I do love thinking of queerness as a place of like accepted liminality, of like not necessarily like lost in a scary way, but lost in a wonderful way.
Like, yeah. Like, what will I meet?
Yeah,
every
yeah.
time I've ever been lost, like, I've found the most beautiful
for sure.
valleys of nature, you know?
So my next question then, we've already kind of touched on it. Do you feel like queerness connects to tending the land or, like, plants and nature and all that kind of stuff?
Most definitely from the dynamics and relationships plants hold with themselves in a community as an environment, you know, or even the ecosystem and the presence of other species, you know, there's the gynodimorphic cardinal, you know, like when you meet queerness before you as it settles. Well, I've never met that bird, but personally, but understanding that their existence is present and that I'm constantly moving across cardinals, and plants are always revealing that to me, that beyondness and wholeness at the same time.
I love that. That's really beautiful. And I definitely feel similarly myself. Like, I feel like I feel most like myself and in my identity when I'm with like all the different siblings, like whether I see seeing deer in nature or I'm like taking a walk near the creek. I definitely really love, I resonate a lot with like bodies of water. But I love you sharing that. We're already at our first break. So stay tuned and we'll be back talking more about queerness and nature and plants and gardening with Nia. I'm your host, Robin, and this is Queerly High Valley.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Robin with Queerly High Valley. I'm back with my conversation with Nia, and we're talking about queerness and gardening and plants, and super excited to keep that conversation going. So jumping into this next part of our conversation, I thought to ask, what does community mean to you, and has that changed over time? I thought to ask you this because I think of, like, so you help run the MLK garden, and I think of that, I mean, obviously it's a garden, but it's also like a connection point for so many people in the community. And so I wanted to ask you about, it's a big question, but what does that kind of community mean to you, or community in general?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think a community is a hyper local and micro pebble in this like pond of existence. Mm-hmm. So it's complex. Mm-hmm. We hold many things mm-hmm. for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And it's the merging of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's the merging of our individual familial histories. It's the amplification of what we're experiencing in the world mm-hmm. in this like contained space. Mm-hmm. It holds our joys.
Yeah.
Possibly. I think it's a, specifically in the garden, it's a place to process. Mm. And it has beautiful complexities and challenging complexities. Mm. The differences and the uniqueness of all of us and the way those can blend together or be extremely dissonant.
I see, yeah.
You know? And so that was not always my definition. As we talked earlier, I existed in extreme polarities, segregation in the dynamics of me growing up. My families were separated, and I was in this visitation. Here is this, and that is there. And that comes up still a lot, you know, of me healing that, working that, examining, chewing on that, digesting it. And so the definition I hold now, grateful, you know, to it is the most beautiful part of my life, even when it's really hard, even when I make mistakes and I make them, you know, you have a choice.
We all do,
you know, and so you have that choice and you try it. I find it as like a hypothesis, like there I am, you know, this is being presented, this dynamics, this interpersonal experience is happening. This is the way I'm processing it at this moment with what I have, tools and support. Okay, boom, 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 let me try. Ooh, that one did that round. Not the best, humbly, oof. I receive, you know, that is the outcome. Are we all happy with it? What's the percentage of our okayness with this outcome? Do we need a different, okay, let's re-examine, let's re-talk, let's retry again, day after day, week after week. So yeah, community, I think, is this clustering, very living experience.
It's kind of like an organism, like, yeah, for sure. And it, I appreciate the words that you use in your definition, even just like the idea of like trying again and again. Because I do think that there's like a constance to a community too. Like you're constantly giving something, people are giving things, and then all those things are mixing around and processing. I did want to ask you about something you said about the garden as like a space for processing. How has that showed up maybe for you or other folks who you've seen? And you don't have to share any like personal details. I'm just curious, like, how that manifests, because that's a really, it makes a lot of sense to me, because there's so much about like plant life and then death and then life that is a lot about processing.
When you think about the process of a growing space, one, you have to look at the space itself, the land. You have to look at yourself, you know, and then you have to create space, right? And I think of that creating of the space for the plants, the mapping or so, is the shifts that you have to make to get you from one point in time to whatever distance in the future you are looking towards.
Mm-hmm.
I look at opening the earth. The hole in which you plant some being in is like a mouth, and you're talking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking into that space that I've created. I'm talking and I'm speaking into myself. So that process for me looked like I have to eliminate or be conscious of when I'm not speaking of myself well. Because then if I'm not doing that to myself well, that is how I'm engaging or possibly creating in and with others, right?
Yeah.
And then there's watching something grow, something blossom. And while we keep it poetic, sometimes that is not cute.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is rough and there is pruning. Mm-hmm. And I've witnessed that in others. I've found solidarity and support in others as they are feeling vulnerable enough to share that with me. And I'm like, oh, so it's not just me. You know, I am not alone in that, and that mirror being held up to me.
Yeah.
The way the garden can hold that. And I think sometimes I love gardening in silence with many people present, because then we're getting to all work on our own individual existences together. And sometimes we don't, that's all we need is the presence of somebody versus that pressure to share.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so it's the idea that both and can happen.
I love that. That was so beautiful. And it makes so much sense to me too, is like having that external place to reflect too. Like sometimes I like need to look at things in the world to like help me process stuff. Like sometimes it's like oddly specific, but like I like to look at trees that are like growing out over the water as like beings that are navigating, like being in a difficult space but still finding ways to like dig their roots in. So like I can see how like looking at things in a space or other plants and like having that ability to reflect on your life, whether it's allowed or not, is really fruitful. So we've been talking a little bit about the MLK garden. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the space in general if they're not familiar with it, and what it's been like to guide it?
The MLK garden sits on the south side of Bethlehem between Packer Ave and the beginning of 4th Street. It's the back quarter quadrant of the Martin Luther King Jr. Park. It is spatially about 58 feet by 38 feet to give you the idea of how much space it takes. I guess 2020, Melanie, Amanda Lewis, and I started Afros in Nature, a peer support group for the BIPOC community to experience nature and the outdoors in safer ways than individually and alone. And we had all these pods. We had the Outdoors and Rec, and we had Food Sovereignty. And then we realized that was a big project or a big... ideas, visions. So Afros in Nature continued to focus on outdoors and rec. And then I moved away, and when I came home, I decided to commit to the gardens. And that space and opportunity was still available. And that's how MLK is still something, a space I get to care for. It is probably one of the most beautiful existences to me that exists in the valley. We have two raised beds that are ADA height. So for the last year and a half, I've been working on trying to have that be an all-bodied accessible garden. So in the next few weeks, we'll be ordering the gravel to lay in modified stone and have mobility devices be able to safely like navigate their way in through the garden. there is a mud kitchen and cooking utensils and a little turtle for our newer beings that are here. There is a bench for people to rest and maybe not do any work at all. Hopefully somewhere inside or close outside there'll be a table to share food, but right now that's pretty that's transported. So coming to and from Community Action of Bethlehem, and we pop it up and we sit it down, and there are different opportunities to learn from artists. And for the last three, this is the third year, I do stories in the garden. And that's where a number of things get to occur. We share our stories. I share stories of plants. And last year it was meeting familial dynamics. So I planted the mallow family. So it was cotton, okra, hibiscus, and marshmallow.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. And watching the way their blossoms and flowers all were very similar in each other, but different in color and size, and the leaf shapes were different, and they all required something uniquely to individually exist. And okra, I think, yeah. But witnessing that and witnessing the history of all those different plants while they're still considered relatives.
That's really cool. I love that. I didn't know that they were all in a family together, but that's really beautiful also to know. I guess my second to last question is, what are some ideas that are budding for you right now? Like, what are you looking forward to for the future, either for the garden or for yourself?
I really want to have the song poems I've created that are inspired mostly from nature and the world to be created and transformed into a songbook. And then collectively seeing what the songs of other people are and what they're about. I think songbooks hold a pretty big history, but then finding different spaces to play amplifying and having those sounds. I love singing across large spaces to trees and seeing if that tree will move or respond to me and know that I'm talking to it from so far away to them. That's something I'm playing with in a community or small intimate setting.
That's beautiful. So we're coming to the end of our time. So I want to ask where listeners can support or connect with your work. Obviously, they could go to the garden, but are there any like upcoming events where people might be able to get connected?
This Saturday, I am performing at a sweet little venue on Northside Bethlehem, Slop Sink, a little backyard, beautiful space. And so I'll be sharing my sound collages there. And song poems. Every Wednesday, I'm in the Esperanza Garden, 4:30, but I don't move in typical time constructs, so by 5:30, I'll be there at the latest. there until 8 or 9 o'clock, and then school drop-off and pick-up is not my strongest. And then MLK Garden on Friday evenings. Similar, that 5:30-ish, heavy on the ish time till, I don't know, late into the night usually, because MLK just needs a lot of love.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for spending some time here. This has been Queer Lehigh Valley and my guest, Nia. Hope you'll join us next time. And thanks for listening.